You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the Arizona Diamondbacks. I am Allison Sutter from MLB.com, and I am joined by my colleague Steve Gilbert, who has covered the Diamondbacks for MLB.com since the very, very beginning. So he has seen a lot of people come in and out of this organization, and he has seen the team do really well, and he's seen the team not do so well and look toward next season, and that's kind of where we are right now. So, Steve, let's talk about 2015 and looking ahead to what the new general manager, whoever that might be, is going to be doing for next year. And talk about some of these younger players. I mean, as you know, the Diamondbacks have had kind of a rough season, but they've had a few shining stars, you know, guys that have really made cases for themselves to be in good position to have jobs next year. Maybe we should start with Chase Anderson. But, what have you seen from some of these young guys? And going into next season, what can they, kind of contribute for next year?
Sure, Allison. I think, the main question for the new general manager and for the ownership group is, do they feel like this team can compete in 2015, can realistically compete in 2015? They had $110 million payroll going into this year. They're going to have a high payroll regardless just from the players they have coming back. Do they feel like with the return to health, say a Patrick Corbin and a David Hernandez and, getting Paul Goldschmidt back and having Trumbo, hopefully for them for a whole season, does that kind of put them back in the National West race, or do they need to do more of an in-depth rebuilding type job? And I think once they answer that question, then it becomes, then their off-season priorities come more into focus. You brought up, Chase Anderson is a great example of a young pitcher who took advantage of the injuries and the struggles of a Trevor Cahill and came up and really pitched well. He came up at the beginning of May and was one of their most consistent starters all year long. And is somebody who certainly has pitched his way into the conversation for next year, if not deserving of the right to be penciled in heading into spring training.
Well, it's funny because I've been looking all over and just reading a lot of coverage from a lot of different teams, and everybody's kind of getting shut down as far as pitchers go. Very few guys are actually that were in the rotation, semi-regularly even. Even if they were, called up in the middle of the season, they are not being permitted to actually finish out the season. And I think that's smart. You don't want to, in a lost season especially, you don't want to push these guys and risk injury. It's just funny because, everyone has to have their arms protected so much, basically because they're so valuable, and it's just an expensive thing to employ baseball players these days. But it's a smart thing, right? On the flip side, if you're playing a contender, it's kind of like, you need to throw your best guys out there, but you can't do that to, risk these young arms.
Absolutely, and the Diamondbacks kind of walked that fine line with Anderson. On the one hand, they wanted him to pitch, into September and, farther into September so that hopefully in the future he would have the experience of having done that and so that he could pitch a full season. By the same token, they were a little nervous about it, how high his innings totals were getting. So they skipped him a turn after the All-Star break. They went to a six-man rotation in September and then shut him down here with a week to go so he doesn't make his last start. So in that way, they kind of try to walk that fine line because you're right, a lot of teams are looking at the younger pitchers and just, they don't want to push it. And especially if you're not on a pennant contending team, why risk the injury? It's the same reason why they shut Daniel Hudson down after he came back now from two Tommy John surgeries and appeared in three games in relief. They had initially thought, hey, maybe we can get him 4 to 6 appearances, and then realized after three that he was feeling good, that he, shown what he could do, and that they would quit while they were ahead and let him rest up for next year.
It's interesting because there's two sides of the whole September call-up story. So on one hand, it sort of feels like spring training again with some of these teams that have 35 guys on their roster and they're doing matchups in the bullpen for every single batter. And that doesn't seem quite fair because it's almost like that's really not the team that you've had all season. And when you're playing a contender, I don't know, it kind of bothers me that they're, when these guys are trying to get in the playoffs and they're playing a non-contender, and it just changes the whole dynamic. at the same time, you do want to have enough guys up to be able to protect some of these arms. So I don't know. I mean, I was always in favor of maybe just having like a 30-player limit for a September roster. What do you think?
And, you know, that's a great idea as a way of, you know, maybe making it 30 members, you know, per game. You can only have 30 per game. Maybe you can, you know, switch it up on a day-to-day basis, but not where you're, you know, have 40 players at your disposal during, or maybe you designate 25 and you can change that from game to game, but not have all 40 of your guys eligible. Because you're right, it does change things. And the Diamondbacks have been really cognizant, I think, of, you know, when they're playing a contending team, that they can't just run a tryout camp out there, that they do play some of their regulars, you know, in a series like now when they're playing the Twins, both teams out of the race. I think they're more willing to give a guy like, you know, Bobby Wilson a start behind the plate or some other people that might not get a chance to play very often. But when they're playing a contender, Kirk Gibson has said that, you know, they feel like they owe it to, you know, it sounds corny, but they owe it to the game of baseball to you know, run a representative lineup out there, you know, in fairness.
Yeah, and especially if they're trying to knock some playoff dreams out, like from some of their rivals. You know, they want to absolutely put their best players out there when they're playing a team, maybe like the Dodgers. I'm just speculating on that. Let's talk about Mark Trumbo a little bit. You know, he's affordable. I mean, he's got 2 years of arbitration, if I'm correct on this, and he's not a free agent until 2017. But clearly, when they brought him to the organization, they had a little bit more in mind. He's not the home run hitter that they were counting on when they traded for him. So what to do with him? Bring him back? Try to deal him? What do you think?
It's a great question. You know, they had counted on him to kind of provide, you know, protection in the lineup for Paul Goldschmidt. And he got hurt right out of the chute and just never was fully right. And then when Goldschmidt got hurt, they moved him to first base. Left field, he's looked a little shaky. Part of that was his injury and not being able to move around as well. So I think they have to make a decision this winter. Do they feel like he can play left field? Because if you're a first baseman in this organization, your name's not Paul Goldschmidt, you're not going to play very often. So if they feel like he can play left field, then you know, they probably bring him back. Because if they were to trade him or deal him now, coming off this kind of injury-plagued season, I think they'd be dealing him at a real low end of his value. So that's something they're going to have to really look at and decide, do they feel like that he could be at least an average left fielder.
And now there's the Aaron Hill conundrum. So he's got 2 years and $24 million left on his contract, which is kind of mind-boggling, and he's not having a great season at 241. You know, he's a natural second baseman that he might move to third base. Is it a relatively untradeable contract? He's being a good team player. I mean, everything that you read, he's like totally willing to do whatever the team wants him to do. What do you think they should do with him?
Well, you know, I think that you pointed out $24 million for Aaron Hill right now. That's not a contract that you can easily trade. I mean, you might actually have to eat, you know, $18 million of that to trade him. And so for me, if it were me, and again, I, you know, it's far out of my pay grade, but if it were me, I would try to bank on the fact that he's going to have a little bit of a comeback and try to at least come to spring training with him as your second baseman. Because, again, you're just not going to be able to trade him without eating all that money, and it just doesn't make sense to eat all that money rather than at least take a chance and see if he can be productive at least at the beginning of next season at second base. Or if you really want to go with, you know, Chris Owings at second and Didi Gregorius at short, then let him play third. Although you know you've got Jake Lamb, so then you start, you know, bumping up against that. So for me, I bring him back and put him at second and put Owings at short at least to start the season and see if he can have a rebound season like he did for the Diamondbacks in 2012.
So do you think that Kirk Gibson is sort of just sitting and waiting to hear what might be with him? Is this kind of weird time for him, or does he feel, I mean, I don't know, he's been around the game forever, so I'm sure he's seen just about everything, but what do you think is going to happen with that? You think there's going to be some kind of announcement right up the season?
Yeah, you know, I think that's something that Tony La Russa had hoped to have decided, you know, when the team plays its last game on Sunday, so it'll come soon, but I think he's in a waiting period, a holding pattern right here. And that's certainly got to weigh on a guy's mind, even if he says it doesn't, I'm sure, because, you know, you don't know what your status is going to be for next year. And and that's just got to be a little disconcerting.
Yeah, that's the side of the game that is not a lot of fun. It's really great to work in baseball, but it's so volatile, and you know, at any moment things can just change on a dime, which is, it's just an awkward situation. I mean, not awkward, but just strange, you know, to have this winding down and everyone saying their goodbyes, and you don't know if it's goodbye or like goodbye, I'll see you next spring, or
right,
you know,
and if not,
knows.
You know, and the decision with him then affects the coaching staff as well. So it's like a trickle down effect, and they're all waiting to see where they're, you know, where they're going to be next year. So they hope to have that a little bit a little more clarity to that going into that last game on Sunday. So we should hear soon about Kirk Gibson's status for next year.
All right. Well, we will be paying attention. And Steve, thank you for all of your participation with these podcasts. Appreciate it, and we'll check in with you this offseason, I'm sure.
Catch all of the second half action on MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service. Watch every out-of-market game stream live online or on the go in true HD. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 14 subscription, allowing you to watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.